So in this beautiful text, in this short 30 verses, the teacher has covered the entire gamut of spiritual study, and all the four paths have been covered. Even though they appear to be brief, but the depth of each verse is very powerful, very amazing. How much knowledge is in these little packets. So after having the path covered, the path of karma yoga service, bhakti, the path of love, devotion to God, and the path of pranayam, breath control, where through control of the breath, we are able to control the mind. Now the teacher comes to the path of knowledge. And this teacher, Raman Maharishi, believed that the path of knowledge is the final goal, and all the other three paths help to quieten the mind. They help to purify the mind, but do not remove the ignorance of the mind. And without removing the ignorance, self-realization or God-realization or achievement of moksha, liberation, freedom, is impossible. That was his understanding. And our mission, also predominantly, we emphasize the path of knowledge. And of course, there are other organizations that emphasize path of bhakti, you know, like the Hare Krishna and the other movements. And you know, that is good. That also is good. But here we talk mostly about the path of knowledge. And it is said the path of knowledge is a direct path. It directly takes you to the root of the problem. So they say, do not solve the problem, but dissolve the problem. What happens is that in this world, we have problem-oriented solutions. So you have a problem in the company. So you call a consultant and he will find a solution to the problem. And they'll go away, but then the problem will come back. Or in our mind, you know, we get upset or agitated and then I get stressed out. And so what do I do? Maybe I do some breath control. I do some, go to the temple or church, or go to a psychiatrist and take some pills, or go to a bar and become spiritual. And then, now having become spiritual, temporarily my problem is solved. That night I, you know, sleep very well. But then next morning the problem is standing right there. So I have just solved the problem. I have not dissolved it. Like that consultant may temporarily, if there is a conflict, may come and paper it over, but the root cause of the conflict, which is a fundamental error in the way the CEO thinks or the way the company is structured, unless you go to the root cause, the problem will rear its head all over again. So in Vedanta, they say, do not, you know, temporarily quietening the mind will solve your problem for now, for 6 months, for a year. But you have to go to the root of the problem. And that can be done by inquiring whether the mind is real or not. So they go to the root of the problem. We say, what do you mean mind is not real? I feel it all the time. It's stressing me all the time. And you're going to tell me the mind is not real? Yeah, I'll try. I don't know. I may not be able to convince you. So they say, should we purify or should we inquire? Like I said, you can purify the mind. You can quieten the mind. You can temporarily, you know, make yourself happy, make yourself peaceful. But then sooner or later, the mind, which by its nature has, as we said, two components. One is the functional mind, which we need. You need a mind to get up in the morning, to brush your teeth, to have your breakfast, go to work and all that. But then there is a judgmental or a disturbing mind, and which rears its head the moment some problem arises. And that comes from not knowing the source. Why is my mind disturbed? Why is my mind getting upset? Why am I having problems? So that's why the path of inquiry is said for people who are intellectuals. We are not trying to put the other paths down. They are all necessary. That's why in our Vedas, in our scriptures, There are four sections. The first three sections deal with rituals, prayers, invoking God, doing service, you know, doing good deeds. So why the Vedas have four sections? The first three are devoted to becoming a better individual, more loving, more compassionate, more kind, doing more service, helping others. But then the fourth portion of the Vedas is purely knowledge. There is no emotionalism in there. There is no, they don't say, you know, go out and serve the world or help the poor or pick up garbage. No, it's a straight go to the root of the problem, because ultimately the solution lies in inquiry, in ignorance. That's why using our intelligence, using our thinking ability is necessary. Talking about intelligence, this couple had a 5-year-old boy. So the husband asks the wife, he says, where do you think he got his intelligence from? The boy was very intelligent, doing very well in school. So he said, where do you think he got his intelligence from? The wife says, it must be from you, because I still have mine. So we have to inquire. This reminds me of a ghost story. At one time there was a cave where they said there are ghosts and nobody would go there. Some vague noises come at night and, you know, people are moving around, and that became, you know, people would be very scared. And then they said, you know, somebody said, let's offer prayers. So they started offering prayers to the ghosts. Other people said, you know, let's donate some, do some charity, or let's leave some food for them or some offering. And all different things were done, but, you know, nothing happened. The sounds remained. So finally, one wise person came and they said, don't go there, don't go there. He said, what is it? There's ghosts. He said, ghosts? Yeah, you know, they make all kind of noises and it's very scary. At night in the cave, it's very dark. Let me see what it is. Let me get a light. He said, no. Why are you so scared? So he took a flashlight. Yeah, let me go inside the cave. You know, he was the first person who had the courage. And he walked into the cave, put on the light and shone it everywhere. And all he saw was bats. There were bats and there were little, you know, cats. And, you know, they were just running around and making little noises. And people had misunderstood that to be the ghost. So that is what they say. The path of inquiry is like that flashlight, which goes to the root of the problem. And we do not assume there is a problem, but we try to find out what is indeed the cause. Why am I getting disturbed? Why is my mind upset? Why do I get angry? Why don't I know who I am? You know, the scriptures say you are that consciousness. And when we meditate, but why am I not able to abide in that knowledge? Why do I get into conflicts? Why do I get stressed out? It's like, you know, there were two partners who were fighting, and they in the lawsuit, they got so upset. You know, they were very good partners, very good friends. The company was doing very well, and something happened and they got upset and they sued each other. And there was a big lawsuit for, you know, millions of dollars against each other. But then in that provision on that corporation agreement, there was a provision that in case of a doubt, they have to go through arbitration. They cannot directly go to the court. So they said, okay, you know, it's required. We'll go to the arbitration, but neither I'm going to agree nor you are. Ultimately, we'll end up suing each other. And suing means, you know, they spend so much time and money. And so the arbitrator sat down and said, you know, what is the cause of the problem? So one said, oh, he has done this, he has done that, he does. Other one said, he does this. And when he looked into the cause of the problem, it was all a simple misunderstanding. He had not understood. Both of them had good intentions for the, you know, for the good of the company, but had different ways to do about it. And so what he, by sitting into the discussion, he was able to find out that the problem was not as big as they had made it out to be. So by going to the root of the problem, he avoided, you know, a lengthy lawsuit and the breakup of the company and all the problems. So that's what they're saying, that the path of inquiry is the one that takes us to the cause, to the root. And we do not deal with the problem on the surface. It's like when your tree is not doing good, There's this story about this boy who had planted this tree, and he was crying, "My tree is not growing, my tree is not growing." So mother said, "Are you watering the tree?" "Yes, I am daily watering the tree." So he said, "Let me see." So every morning he would wash off the leaves with water, you know, just clean the leaves and the branches. He said, "I have watered." She said, "No, you have to go to the root. Unless you water the root, the tree is not going to do well. It's going to perish and die." So that's what they say, go to the root of the problem. And Raman Maharishi, when anybody came to him with any problem, and that's why not too many people went to him, because he was a realized master, but he never traveled. He never went anywhere. He stayed in one temple. He said, "If anybody wants, he'll come and see me here." People said, "You know so much. You are such a realized master. You should be traveling all over the world and giving talks." There was a French journalist who came. He says, "You should do something. Why don't you do anything?" And he laughed. He did not do anything, but thousands of people came to visit him. And he would be sitting in a chair reading his newspaper, or just sometimes sitting in silence contemplating. And every day there would be lines and lines of people who would be coming to see him. And it's very interesting, majority of the people would come with a lot of questions and doubts and problems, and life is so much stress. And just by seeing this great Mahatma, this great saint, just by sitting in his presence, they would just sit for hours and just bask in his peace. Because he radiated peace, he radiated love, he didn't have to speak anything. Just by being in his presence, majority of the people's questions and problems were solved. He said, "Oh, I have got the answer to my question." He said, "But you didn't ask him." He said, "I didn't need to ask. He's such a great saint that just by sitting in his presence, my problem was solved." But once in a while, a person would have the courage to ask the question, "Mahatmaji, I have this question, I have this problem." "What kind of problem?" "Well, I have this problem of my work or my business or my health or I'm too much stressed, or a problem with my wife, my children don't listen to me, my parents," whatever the problem was. So Raman Maharishi, most of the time, his answer would be, "Who has the problem?" "I have the problem, that's why I'm here." "You have the problem? Who are you?" He said, "Well, my name is so-and-so. I'm Ramakrishna, Arya, this and that, Ayer and all." "Oh, that's just a name your father gave you. Who are you? I'm not asking your name." He said, "Well, I'm a man or a woman. I'm not asking your sex. Who are you?" "Well, I'm an Indian. I'm short, I'm tall, I'm young, I'm old. I'm not asking your nationality. I'm not asking your age. I'm not asking your height. I'm not asking your skin color. I'm not asking your race. Who are you?" Devoid of all these conditionings, who are you? When you don't have these conditionings, "I am an Indian or an American or a male or a female or black or white or short or tall or rich or poor. I'm not asking for your financial status." Then somebody will say, "I'm a Brahmin. I'm from that caste." "I'm not asking your caste. I'm asking, who are you?" So he would lead every individual to the root cause of the problem, and that is inquire who has the problem. And when you truly go to the root cause, that's how the problem. So he made people think and solve their own problem themselves. He did not give an answer. He says, "I don't believe in spoon feeding. You come with a question and I give you the answer." No. He's made people think and come out with this. That's why his books are not easy. I don't know why I took this text. I myself am having trouble, but together we can study this, because this subject is quite difficult. But together, when we discuss, when we talk, I have some commentaries by some teachers, so I'm able to think about it and come up with, hopefully some kind of understanding of the subject, which I understand, and I'll try to share it with you. So this text will be a learning experience for all of us, and it will be something which, as we said, it's a direct path, but it's not easy. That's why Raman Maharishi never had too many followers. People would come and, you know, sit in his presence, but not too many stayed there because he never gave ready-made answers. He did not believe in spoon-feeding. He made us think. So this direct path is not an easy path. You know, that's why it's very interesting when a lecture like that is going on, even when our Swamiji's come and all, we find there are 30, 40, 50 people at the most, right? But if you have a musician here, you know, if you have a rock star, or if you have Shah Rukh Khan performing, you know, some Indian actor or some Hollywood actor, or even somebody singing, you know, hymns like bhajans, or singing the, you know, psalms, this, what do you call this, church music, what do they call that music? Yeah. Hymns and, you know, that devotional music, there'll be thousands of people. Why? Because everybody enjoys singing, everybody enjoys dancing. But when you have to sit down and think, I say, it's too high for me, I you know, it's too difficult. So, but in my opinion, it is a lot more rewarding. Again, you know, I'm not putting down rituals and singing bhajans. That's all very nice. But unless you go to the root of the problem, you will not be free of the problem. You have to go to the root. So, and there's no spoon feeding. Each one of us has to think for ourselves. I'll talk a little bit about the presence and absence theory. Now, suppose you go to a particular house and there is a boy who is very mischievous. So you go to the house and you find his room is a mess and things are thrown over everywhere. Even the house, he has broken things and all. You say, what happened? Well, you know, you think maybe it is the boy. And the next day you go again, there is the same thing. And then the third day you go, the boy has gone to visit his grandparents for 2 weeks. And every day, 2 weeks, you find the house is clean. It's spick and span. It's not being broken. Nothing is broken. Nothing is disturbed. So you understand when the boy is present, all these problems happen. The house becomes a mess and things are broken. When the boy is absent, then the house is clean. So then you can presume, even though somebody may not tell you, but you can presume that, okay, it's the boy who is the cause of the problem. When he's present, there is a problem. When he's an absent, there is no problem. So the boy is the cause. So that's how you reach the conclusion that maybe that may be the problem. So instead of cleaning the house every day, instead of putting things back, maybe let us solve the problem. Let us talk to the boy or teach him. So you first find the cause that it is the boy, and then you try to fix it. So similarly, we find that in our case, when our mind is agitated or disturbed, then I'm stressed out. Or when there is a mental problem, or there is a physical problem, or financial problem, or a relationship problem, or family problem, children problem, then my mind gets disturbed. But then when the problems are not there, or even if the problems are there, but if I'm somehow able to quieten the mind and let the mind not get into anger and greed and jealousy and hatred and competition and acquiring and possessing, when through right knowledge, through practice of rituals and prayers and karma yoga, if I'm able to quieten the mind, so that means, does that mean? The quieten mind means the disturbing mind is gone, my functional mind. So when the disturbing mind is active, then I am upset. But when the disturbing mind is quiet, it is absent, then I am at peace. So what is the problem? The problem is not me. The problem is the disturbing mind. When the disturbing mind is active, then all the problems arise. Then I get angry. Then I get jealous. Then I hurt people. Then I fight with people. So that's what they say, the presence and absence theory is that the mind that is disturbed should be made absent. How do you make it absent? By inquiring as to what is the origin of this mind. Why is my mind getting disturbed? Why is my mind agitated? Why do I have problems? So go to the root of the problem And once you make this disturbing mind absent, then you will find your life becomes so peaceful, and such a person is called a saint. See, you and I, we have this disturbing mind that has competition and selfishness and jealousy. But a saint has a functional mind. He or she, of course, you know, they get up in the morning, they take a shower, they eat breakfast, they do everything as you and I do. But the difference between them and me is that they only have the functional mind. They do not have this disturbed mind, this disturbing mind. They do not have jealousy and greed and hatred and anger and all that. So that is the presence and absence theory that look into the cause of the problem. The other thing that I would just like to end with, we were not able to go actually into the verse because I thought the introduction is quite important. And next week, I'll just very quickly go through the, you know, introduction again, and then we'll actually do the verse. But we find that in this world, what are the scientists doing? They're solving the problems of the world, right? Fixing the world. If there is no heat, okay, let's create a heater. If it's too hot, let's create air conditioning. If people cannot get around, let's create a car or a hot or a plane or a rocket. Do we want to go to the moon? Let's create a rocket. If there is, you know, if there's too much population, you know, then let us, you know, build multi apartments so that more people can live. So scientists and economists and politicians and physicists, they're playing a very useful role, where what they are doing is they are changing the surroundings to make life comfortable for. And they have made life comfortable. Now we are, even in the heat, we are able to stay in, you know, relative comfort. It's cool. We have light. Even if it's dark outside, we have light. We have cars. We can go. We have street lights. You know, so everything they have done to make our life comfortable. But have they made us our life happier? And if you ask people, are you happy? And most people say, I'm not. In fact, the conflicts have increased all over the world. There are religious conflicts. There are political conflicts. There is stress. The amount of Valium and the psychiatric medicines is rising. I see patients all the time. They're on multiple psychiatric medicines. They are very comfortable. They are wealthy. They live in a nice house. They live in the country club. But when you look at the list, they are taking 5 or 3 or 4, you know, psych meds. I'm sure you see that too. So we see that all the time. I mean, the person should be very happy, right? He has a nice house in the country club. He has a family. He has a big job. He's a CEO in some business. He's driving a Mercedes or a BMW. And he's living in this gated. Everything is fine. He has a huge bank balance. Still, he has so much stress. You know, half his money goes to a psychiatrist or to psychiatric. Why? Because they have changed their surroundings. They have not changed themselves. And the same thing problem, you know, all of you know the Bhagavad Gita, where with this message of the Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna, the soldier, just very briefly, those who may not know the story, but the Bhagavad Gita is the conflict between two parts of a family. They were cousins, and there were 100 cousins who were evil, the Kauravas, and there were 5 cousins who were good, 5 brothers. So 5 brothers were good and the 100 brothers were evil, but they were cousins. You know, their grandfather, you know, they had a common grandfather, and then, you know, who had 2 sons. And the whole story is about who, because they were the ruling big dynasty at that time. So who will rule India? Will India be ruled by the 100 evil brothers? Or will India be ruled by the 5 good brothers, you know, who were kind and loving and honest? And the evil brothers tried to have the good ones killed and took away their, you know, kingdom and did all kinds of evil things to them. And so when the good brothers asked for their right, that we should get our kingdom back, and they told them, you have to fight, otherwise you won't get it. So Arjuna was on the side of the good, and when the battle was ready to break out, he saw that this battle was between two parts of the same family. And he said, after this battle, you know, thousands of people will be dead, because they were very powerful. They had lots of soldiers, so thousands of people will be dead. You know, women will become widows, children will become orphans, so much blood will be shed. And is it just worth for a piece of land? And Krishna tells him, he says, the battle is not over a piece of land. It is not over. It is over the battle of good versus evil. Who is going to rule India for the next few hundred years? Are they going to be the evil? And if the evil people rule, then obviously the country will become evil. If the people on top are corrupt, then the whole culture becomes corrupt. Like when Hitler was invading whole of Europe, you know, the question was for America whether to get into the war or let it be. You know, it's not affecting us. How does it matter? No, it did matter, because how do you want the world to be ruled by? And so that's why America stepped into the battle, and Britain and Russia and everybody got together. So similarly, here the choice was, so Krishna being God, he was the incarnation of God on earth. He, with one finger, he could have destroyed the evil army. You know, he could have just rolled a finger and they would have all been killed. But he said, I'm not going to do that. That's not my job. I'm here to teach this, because he was the commander of the good soldiers, the good army, the good brothers. So he, in the 700 verses of the Bhagavad Gita, which we discuss every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock, which will be starting in August, he teaches the student how to change his thinking. A shattered personality, how his thinking can be changed. Once his thinking is changed, then his actions automatically become pure, become good. But he was totally, his personality was destroyed. He was very unhappy. He was not ready to fight. And so instead of changing the situation, he changed his thinking. And that's what a teacher will do. Spirituality does not change the world. It's not that by reading the scriptures, suddenly your wife or husband will change, or your children will change, or your boss will change, or your neighbor will change, or the weather will change, or the financial situation will change, or the economic. No, nothing will change. Your mind will change, your thinking will change, your personality will change. And then what will happen is, once you change, then that same situation will not affect you anymore. You will be able to handle the world's problems much more efficiently, much better, much stronger, much more, fitter to handle the world. So the teacher makes our mind strong, so that you can deal with the world. And not only that, but when you change, then you will notice that your circumstances will change by themselves. Because once you change, you become more loving, more compassionate, more kind, more generous. Then you affect the people. So that's what Vedanta does. That's what this knowledge does. Changes us. Changes our thinking. They don't make any attempt to change the surroundings. They say, you change, and the surroundings will change. Even if they don't change, you will be stronger and able to handle. So the world will no longer persecute you. So that is why the path of knowledge is very useful. And so from today, for the next 3 or 4, 5 weeks, maybe about 6 weeks, we'll be dealing with the path of knowledge. And that is, what is this mind, which we'll talk about? Is the mind real? What is this mind? Where does it arise? Who am I? What is the source of ego? And how to, by going to the root of the problem, how to destroy the ego? Because the ego is the main cause of the problem. When I think I am somebody special, and I'm great, and don't need others, and I don't need God. So that is the cause of the problem. So here, in the next few weeks, we'll try to destroy the ego, the ignorance, and hopefully understand. So the subject is a little heavy, so please be patient, hopefully we can together come to some kind of answer. I know it's a difficult subject to talk about, but are there any questions or comments? We have plenty of time.
Negative thoughts coming in your head.
Yeah, I myself personally, I find that I am more detached. I find that even though I'm doing things, But there is somebody who is watching the person. Now, it doesn't happen all the time when I get engrossed, but when I think about it, I realize that I don't get as worked up as I used to. To now, today, if something is happening that is, you know, problem, maybe with the patient or somebody's unhappy or some problem. In the past, I used to get very disturbed. Now I say, okay, you know, you can't make everybody happy all the time, you know. And so I find that this knowledge and this meditation has helped me to detach, where I still function the same. Outwardly, it looks the same, but inside, I feel there is a subtle change. That there is an observer that is watching what is happening. And that is, for me, that has been the change. That there is somebody watching this Anil working. And that is, I think, for me, you know, beneficial. And then also, obviously that makes you more calm and you're not as disturbed and all that. So I think the moment you attach to God, and then what happens is your ego becomes less. The problem is the ego, the I and mine. But when He is working through me, the closer you get to the divinity, the closer you will reduce your ego, the sense of arrogance, the sense of pride. And so the closer you are to the truth, the less your ego is. So He is functioning through me. So you don't no longer feel that I am doing it, but He is functioning through me. The second thing is, when I say that I was created by God and everybody was created by that one God, then I see the oneness. So by being attached to God, a lot of things happen. You know, your idea of ego goes down, your love for people increases, your arrogance goes down, your selfishness goes down. So there's a lot of truth in that statement, attached to God and detached from the world. Detached from the world does not mean that you don't work in the world, but you don't work with attachment, with I and my, but do as His work, and He's working through me. So then your actions become more pure and better, yes. And then obviously, when you're thinking about Him, automatically your mind is peaceful and your mind is happy, because He's all love and peace and compassion and all that. So,
To be pleased, to enjoy pleasure.
Right. Because we're depending on objects or people or things to make us happy. But a wise person, a saint, finds joy within. When he has found God's presence within, then I am the source of happiness. I am happiness. Then I'm not looking for pleasure outside, because all I have to do is turn inward and find that joy. And having discovered that inner joy, then the person is not dependent on the world. Like I depend on the, you know, California Water Service to supply me water, but now tomorrow there is a drought and they shut off the water. They say you'll only get, in many countries, they only get water 4 hours or 6 hours a day. They don't have 24 hours running water, and you have to store water. So I'm dependent on the water service, and if the drought gets worse, that may happen here too. I may not get water all day. So I'm depending on that. But suppose in my house I dig below in my land and I find a deep well, you know, 500 feet, 1,000 feet, and it's full with water. Once I have that well, then if the water service gives me water, fine. If not, I can connect the pipe and draw and drain the water and use as much water as I want for bathing and all. So similarly, having found the source of joy within me, then I don't depend on the world to give me joy. Like this person who has found water in his own backyard does not depend on the world to give him water. If they give water, fine. If not, I'm still fine. So similarly, a wise person, a saint, finds joy within. Then if the world is giving me pleasure, fine. If they're not giving me, he doesn't depend on the world. So that's the explanation for that. That we are looking for joy. If we have it, it's good. But if not, I'm fine. If my husband today didn't smile at me, or my wife didn't say hi, or my boss didn't talk to me, I'm still okay.